fuck you! I spare you! Germany!
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. If I understand correctly, we should be streaming live both at headon.live and over at whiterosesociety.org. And everything, for a change, works. Yay! I can't overestimate or underestimate. Well, I'm just real happy everything's working. This is The Horn. Headonradionetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go. If you would like to click on the chat room box and pick yourself out a screen name and a password and engage yourself in the real-time multimedia madcap zany wacky extravaganza that is the conversation that takes place parallel to this program during the hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and when you pop in there, folks like Anatole and Laborman and Steve from Georgistan and VT Blom will greet you warmly and with a hail fellow well met, fellow being multi-gendered in this particular term of art. They'll say howdy, and you say howdy, and You'll be off and running. Of course, the whole thing is moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a very, very wise Space and Guild master, has decided not to fold space into the 100-degree man cave this afternoon. Right. So that's how things are there. This is a listener-supported program. You know that. I have to go through this stuff every evening. I wish I didn't, but I do. This is a listener-supported program. We keep all the packets passing and the molecules moleculing and the electrons electrolyzing and the protons. You get the idea. The program happens because of you. And only you. That means that, you know, keeping up with the fundraising goal for the days, weeks, and months, we try to raise $200 per evening. And this evening we find ourselves at a little more than that because we've fallen a little short through the week. Big thanks going out to the overnight subscription crew. Thank you very, very kindly. What was a larger deficit was reduced by our buddy Philip in Maryland and by Brenda in Washington State and by Joyce in Washington State. Let's hear it for Washington State. As well as by Kenda and by Joy. So that this evening we have only a $305 fundraising goal to finish out the week, which is a lot more tolerable than, say, some monumental fundraising miracle like $500 or $600. So, you know, 10 at 30, 30 at 10, and we'll just sort of, we'll pull that extra five out of the Gulfstream 5 fuel fund, okay? But one at 300, two at 150, three at 100, four at 75. You get the idea. Hopefully, before the evening's out, we'll knock all of that down. Okay? Okay. It is, of course, the 23rd day of June, 2017. We're 2 days into summer. And we were supposed to be getting kind of soaked here in Appalachistan at the moment. But Tropical Storm Cindy, whose curling arms was supposed to be reaching up into Appalachia, we've seen the low, you know, the low and gray clouds, and we've felt the cool breezes, the freshening breezes. But not so much rain, and what was supposed to be an absolutely sodden weekend is looking up a whole lot more. In fact, partly cloudy tomorrow and Sunday here. So yay, that means I can get out in the yard and have all kinds of good fun with the weed eater and the mower and the branch lopper, and I don't know, maybe build some more fire or something like that. I'm getting a lot of good out of that. It makes me feel very happy, and it's cheaper than golf. So yay. That's at least my plan. On Sunday, I'm going to go and get Agnes, Viking Warrior Princess, and bring her home for a while. She's going to come and spend some time here and get a break from chasing after 10-year-old, 9-year-old, and 7-year-old grandkids. And I'm looking forward to that. I really am. Among other things, we're going to catch up on American Gods. I promised her, and I'm keeping my promise. I'm good at this. I promised her I would not watch American Gods without her. So we've got at least, by the time Sunday rolls around, there'll be a new episode. So I think we've got something like 3 or 4 episodes to catch up with. So there will be a serious American Gods binge going on here at the Kincaid Mansion on the fabulous grounds of the Kincaid Estate. I don't know, we may even just go and sit outside and watch it at night. No, it's a little too buggy right now. But that I'm really, really, really looking forward to that. As noted, Friday on the front porch, here in about, 52 minutes or so, we will fire up the extraordinary, well, not we, Sparky. We'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and we'll invite everybody in to participate in what is a rather unique broadcast experience. Instead of a panel of exalted and self-promoting media types or governmental types, you know, real folks just talking about the issues of the day. And I look forward to it every week just to see what's on folks' minds. We've had some fantastic conversations over the last few weeks. So if you've never been part of Friday on the Front Porch, it's real easy to do. Just fire up Skype, and you know you don't have to have a fancy schmancy studio. You'd be surprised how well things like the microphone on an Apple iPad or MacBook work. I know Larry uses, I think, an iPad sometimes when he calls in from Berkeley. He sounds crystal clear. But no, you don't have to have any particular fancy setup, but what you do have to do is fire up Skype, and then you send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, SparkyDunc, one word, Sparky Dunk. And then Sparky will show you the breadcrumb trail and tell you which quadrant of the sky the Bob signal is flashing in that evening, and you'll be well on your way to participating in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Aw, damn it! Ron and Raleigh with a note... sorry to say, he says, last week was the season finale of American Gods. After what, 6, 7 episodes or something? What kind of a season is that? Yeah, that's just wrong. Oh, well, I did notice that because Agnes was kind of into it the first season. I did notice that pole dork or pole dancer or whatever it is that costume drama about merry oldie England in the the late 18th century, and a guy trying to revive the fortune of his family's ailing coal mine that went under the sea, at Cornwall, something like that. That, so maybe we can do that. But damn! Well, I hope it finaled real good. I haven't seen that yet. Anyway, jump on into Friday on the Front Porch. We got lots of stuff to talk about this evening. And we'll have a darn good time. Thanks for the note, Sylvia. Sylvia letting me know. Hooray, you're loud and clear. I know. And we're trying to get things stabilized and figure out what's going on. I don't know. It could be the way the interface... Who knows? But maybe Ben and I can get that sorted out over the weekend. Suffice to say, we are trying. Oh, and if you can't sort out... if you can't sort out Skype, we do have one phone line for you, so that you can participate in Friday on the Front Porch. That's, of course, the stress line, 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. So we can get one phone line. And depending on how fundraising and things like that goes, here in another week or so, we might have a second hardline phone line come in. So... I mean, that's always a possibility. Trying to expand the ability of folks to get in on the program. Oh, okay. Les tells me, I got your rain in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania. Reverb. Wait a minute. And it was biblical. Like that, Les? Okay. Well, we got enough here that the grass started going again, and so I'll be busy this weekend. Yeah, okay, Marty offering the not an excuse, but he says Stars is doing American Gods in the British TV mode, fewer episodes, hopefully higher quality. Yeah, okay, I'll live with that, I guess. At the end of the evening last night, I watched Star Trek Beyond. I was not... Yeah, I'm just having a hard time. Because Geezer, I'm having a hard time getting worked up about the reboot. Just am. I mean, I was yearning for a Klingon, a Romulan, hell, an Andorian. It anything, please. But no. I did notice one thing though. I think and maybe this is a little bit from the Department of Paranoia department. But I think, Star Trek Beyond came out, year and a half ago? And I think, after our conversation about Wonder Woman, I think I figured out why Gal Gadot, I don't know how to pronounce her name, Smith, G-A-D-O-T, I think I figured out why she got the Wonder Woman gig. because there was an ass-kicking Muslim female cast in Star Trek Beyond. It's with that, you know, it's kind of like when you've got kids that are close together in age and you can't let one have something without giving something to the other because one of them will throw a fit. Well, a trained dance professional with some who displayed some acting talents played the what would you call her, in classical theatrical terms, you would call her the ingenue, I suppose, in Star Trek Beyond. And she's Algerian-born, French-trained. So, naturally, we wind up with an Israeli as Wonder Woman. And that conversation from previously this week. Because, you know, it's not too much to ask to try to keep, you know, a little bit of peace. And at this rate, a very, very little bit of peace. Right. Let's see. Oh, can just apropos of nothing, and certainly not momentous, earth-shattering, and I'm pretty sure not a topic of conversation anywhere else in either terrestrial or internet-based broadcasting today or yesterday. Just one of those moments of the art of word knowing. I read popular science articles pretty regularly. There's some interesting stuff there. But you know, after long experience, that I have a certain fascination with the writing of headlines and copy editing, things like that. And I ran across this one, yesterday. And so it's a real story. It's a very serious story. Because if climate change is wrecking the planet, or the planet's ability to provide sustenance and habitability for we big-brained primates, well, then that's something that we should probably pay attention to. In this particular story, it's the nexus between climate change and something that we very much do care about, our coffee. Writing at Popular Science, Sarah Chodosh asserts the following. Most people think that climate change is real and is already impacting the world, but not many people think that climate change is affecting them. And we have touched on that here as one of the problem aspects of climate change, because, you know, there are no blinking neon lights overlaid on hurricanes that say, oh yeah, this is Cat 5 because it would have been Cat 3 but climate change. There are no leaflets dropped from tornadoes on trailer parks saying, you know, this murderous tornado brought to you by climate change. Floods do not floods don't leave messages in the muck saying climate change was here. They just wreak more and more devastation. But apparently climate change is going to impact our morning cuppa. Cuppa Joe, Java, Jamoke, carbon remover, depending on where you're getting it. and I know I get made fun of every time I say decaf, but enjoying coffee is much more difficult for decaf drinkers than it is for ordinary. Because y'all ordinary coffee drinkers, you've got all kinds of alternatives. I mean, even here in almost level west by Cold Trump Genistan, in the heart of Appalachistan, if I'm silly enough to do it, I can actually lay out $21 for not quite a pound of Jamaican Blue Mountain coffee beans, which, of course, I would then have to hammer into submission because I don't think the grinder works anymore. But I can do that. And that, of course, is short of the coffee that's made out of beans that have been passed through the digestive tract of some... the civet cat, that's what it is. It's civet cat poop coffee beans. Jamaican coffee beans are some of the most rare and precious in the world. But we're not talking about Jamaican coffee beans. We're talking about Ethiopian coffee beans. Apparently, a lot of agricultural scientists have spent a lot of time and energy and cogitation in trying to ascertain just what is going to happen to the coffee crop as a result of onward marching climate change. Because coffee is a huge global commodity. Probably up there with rice and wheat and corn, coffee, sugar. Well, there's a brand new report out. Over half of Ethiopia's current coffee crop is grown in areas that will not be suitable for agriculture in the near future. The journal Nature Plants had the story. And that's, Ethiopia is a big coffee producer. Nice coffee, too. Good coffee. But this is... I mean, that's a stunning number. I mean, you call up Google Earth, you look at Ethiopia, and you know, Rhode Island, it's not. You know, you can kind of get lost in the scope of things when you're looking at the African continent. You got a country here and a country there, but it's a big damn continent. And, you know, it's sort of like the message over on the passenger side mirror. Objects in mirror may be nearer than they appear. And countries in Africa may be larger than you think. Good God, just look at Congo. But anyway, coffee is grown in a particular geographical region of Ethiopia. And half of that region will not support coffee agriculture, not just in the future, but in the near future. Now, if you're the Ethiopian government, this is probably worrisome, because export dollars, because capitalism, because colonialism, because mercantilism. That adds Ethiopia to a list of countries that include Brazil, Indonesia, and Colombia as well. And all four of those countries are going to lose 50% of their coffee-producing land area within the next 33 years. See, that's not one of those loopy things where you go, none of us are going to be around to see that. 33 years, there's a good chance a bunch of us are going to be around to see. Maybe not me, maybe not you, but a bunch of us. I mean, if you're 40, that's when you're 73. And you know what? 73 is no time to have your cup of coffee in the morning screwed with. But it's reality. By 2050, So what does that mean? Doesn't basic market dynamics tell us that means if you lose half of the prime coffee producing areas in the world, that you could expect it to become twice as scarce? I mean, we know I get into trouble when there's something involving ciphering going on, but I'm feeling pretty good about that one, unless somebody wants to straighten me up and I got it wrong. If you got half as much land, right, and demand remain, well, demand's, but that's the thing, demand's not going to remain the same. Demand's going to go up because we keep fucking our way into a higher population on the planet. Asa, dadgummit, it's not like I'm drinking decaf because I lied. Why not switch to regular coffee then, Bob? Because my heart goes... It sounds like one of those noises, mouth noises Paul McCartney made on, like, Uncle Albert Admiral Halsey, whatever. And it's not fun. I drank too much. I did too much, dude. I drank way too much in those years that I was working overnights and would go through two or three pots on a night. And it wasn't even good coffee, damn it. But that's just coffee. Chocolate's going to be screwed up. But hey, the staff of life, things like wheat, barley, beer, wheat, barley, oats, rice, rye, all these things are subject to the, there's not a lot of positive changes. I haven't seen a lot of stories about, we're going to have a shitload more oysters, or, you won't be able to grow coffee, but it's going to be, it's going to be great for quinoa. Uh-uh. No. The author of this story goes on to say one potential solution to a shrinking amount of useful land is to move coffee production to a higher altitude where it'll be cooler. The recent report in Nature Plants, though, says you can't just move to a higher altitude without changing how the coffee tastes. And then notes that there are cost considerations and price as well. And hint, the coffee is not going to taste better. It's going to taste worse. So that then brings us to the art of word knowing portion of why I brought the story up in the first place. The headline for this, And Popular Science, I presume somebody, Popular Science, I mean, Jesus, they've been around forever. They're a real magazine and stuff. They're bound to have a copy editor. The headline for this says, climate change will make your coffee cost more and taste worse. Anybody want to try it? Anybody want to take a run at that one? There's no problem with climate change will make your coffee cost more. No. The problem comes from and taste worse. In order for something to be worse, these are comparatives, okay? In order for something to taste worse, it has to be bad in the first place. So the presumption in that headline, let's use bad English and see if it makes it any clearer. Climate change will make your coffee cost more and taste badder. I don't think most of us are drinking coffee because we hate the taste. I mean, granted, some of us love the java caffeine buzz. And some of us are such caffeine junkies that we get horrible, horrible headaches in the absence of caffeine over the course of a day. But How would you? Climate change will make your coffee cost more. And affect the flavor. And not taste as good. Does Sarah Chodosh not drink coffee? Taste worse. Well, Bill, I tell you what, let's get together. I know we both think coffee tastes like shit, but let's get together and hammer out the final details of that contract tomorrow morning over coffee. What's that you say? You'd rather do it over sour milk? Well, that tastes worse than coffee. I'll agree with you, but you know, if we've got to have something, let's just have something blandly hateful like coffee, because it tastes worse. Badder. I know, language snob. But the underlying story is real, and the underlying problem is even more so. Note coming in from Sister Carol Baker, who I suspect is not done for the week. Friday doesn't quite mean Friday, but what it means to I think Carol goes about 24/7. This just in from the science desk: scientists say solar panels on a border wall won't compensate for the torrent of heat-trapping gases being emitted by the Amber Fuhrer. Back to Biff in the Storm Tracker Center, Biff. How's the weekend looking?
This is Biff at the weather desk, and it looks like continued shitstorms in the Washington, D.C. metro area for the foreseeable future.
Back to you, Bob.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, the shitstorm continues over the tapes issue. Now, because at this point in time, reality... You know, if there was a commodities market for reality, the value of reality, people would have lost their shirts if they'd bought reality futures back in November. Because the value of reality has just sunken through the floor. Because Comrade Kumquat has declared that,
I didn't have any tapes. When a couple of weeks ago he said, I'll tell you soon whether there are tapes. You're not going to like the answer.
He's a liar, okay? And I know the for-profit media are still having a real problem saying this. And They have panel discussions that involve deep, murky inquiries into intent and the propriety of using the word liar. Honest to God, I think some people in the for-profit media, if Donald Trump stepped to the microphone and said, "Hi, I just wanted to let you know I'm a liar. I'm a really fabulous liar. I tell the best lies. I've got the best lies. The people I put the best, I've brought in the best liars around me. You're going to love this lying so much." You'd still have panel discussions on Chicken Noodle News and whatnot about whether or not it was okay to call him a liar. What else do you call him after the whole tapes fiasco? I'm at a loss. And it just gets weirder and weirder and weirder. Because now, let's see, what was the latest goofball notion put forward? That he did the, it was spicy. That because of Tangerine Tiberius's brilliant lie about the tapes, he forced James Comey to tell the truth. And I saw a clip of the Clementine Caligula earlier today saying, well, I've told the truth all along. My stories remain consistent. My stories remain the same. I haven't changed my story. You'll have to decide whether James Comey changed his story. That man has trouble telling his name the same way twice. It may be the only thing he can do. And by the way, because you know, I have to get up early in the morning every day. Sometimes earlier than others. Yesterday was one of those 4:30 mornings. Ouch. Today was a 6 o'clock morning. And yeah, as we've discussed in the past, there's not a lot on about that time. I went back and forth between Morning Joe and the Tom Hanks, Leo DiCaprio remake of Catch Me If You Can. But I popped over to Morning Joe long enough to see the appearance, groundhog-like, of Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, engaged in a conservative conversation with old Joe, who now apparently is being promoted as a rock and roll star because he said it's really all he ever wanted to do. And Joe asked Randy, Aqua Buddha. Aqua Buddha. Yeah. Why it is that we couldn't, and really, I'm glad I was, you know, sitting there on the bed. If I'd been in a chair, I probably just would have starched up and fallen over. Why it is that we just can't seem to let the free market handle health care in America. And my first thought was, wow! Y'all have really done a good job of completely forgetting everything that went before the arrival of Barack Obama in the presidency of the United States back in January 2009. They've forgotten the women whom the free market declared had pre-existing conditions because, you know, they woke up one morning and had a baby inside them. Mm-hmm. They've forgotten all the other pre-existing conditions, too, that threw millions of American citizens into the tender mercies of that self-same free market. Yeah, just foot gone. Don't remember. Sorry. Huh? What? Where? Who? Huh? And that was what Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, offered up. That the reason we've got problems in the American healthcare system is because, and he really said this, is because we won't let the free market do its magic in healthcare. And then he cited LASIK surgery, you know, because he's a really, really bad ophthalmologist. That's why a libertarian ophthalmologist. Hey, I don't care if you can see anything. I just want to get paid. That's what it means to be a libertarian ophthalmologist. Here, let me pull your eyeballs up by their bootstraps. And better yet, why don't I bill you for pulling your eyeballs up by your bootstraps, and you pull them up yourself? Free market. Yay. And he cited, well, you know, LASIK has come down, the cost of LASIK surgery has been around for 15 years, and the price has come down dramatically because it's $1 million laser. And he reiterated, $1 million laser. But people are shopping around their doctors, and they're saying, but you charge more than, and they're going to the lower cost doctor for the LASIKs. One gets the idea that there's a little bit of the green-eyed monster at work there with Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. He must have been beaten out there in the Bowling Green, Kentucky market by a lower priced ophthalmologist. Well, I already spent $1 million on this laser. He's over there using like a hunk off of a rusty old bandsaw. But free market. Every time we see consumers have a choice, healthcare consumers have a choice in their treatment options, we see the price go down. And of course, I immediately thought of, oh, how about a cancer patient? She walks into the doctor's office and says, I found this lump in my breast, and I was wondering, how much does the doctor charge for a radical mastectomy, and does it cost less if it's just a lumpectomy? And if he has to take lymph nodes, are lymph nodes a la carte like the spinach at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse? Because people behave so very, and this is not a criticism, people behave so very rationally when a doctor looks at them and says, cancer. They just coolly go about the business of price comparing from one oncologist to the next. They compare, say, the cost differential between chemotherapy versus flying to Indonesia to have psychic surgery done and a piece of bloody chicken liver palmed by a huckster allegedly psychically pulled from the tissue of their... Yes. Uh-huh. Or... in a more extreme situation, the guy who clutches at his chest and feels that lightning running down his left arm and says, I think I'm having a heart attack. I wonder which hospital emergency room is cheaper. How about Agnostic Memorial or Saint God's International? Here, while I've got a few breaths left in my body, let me jump online and see if they've got a price configurator just like the Mayo Clinic does. Stupid bastards like Rand Paul apparently don't live in the same world we live in. He's a libertarian, so he always thinks about money first. And he's youngish, and he's got reasonably good health, so nothing's ever going to happen to him. But you would think, maybe, and he was there in Alexandria, Virginia last week. Did he, when they had neutralized the shooter, did Rand Paul run up to Steve Scalise and say, Steve, you know what the problem is here? You're just going to go to some hospital and you're not going to price compare. I tell you what, they've got the bleeding slowed down. Let me just check online here and see where I can get you the cheapest life-saving surgery, Steve. Oh, hell no! No, price comparing is a way of saying that the poor are too profligate in taking care of their healthcare needs. And as Carol Baker points out, you know, maybe instead of calling an ambulance, Rand Paul should have called Steve Scalise an Uber. You know, if there's one available. Of course, there's no emergency professionals in an Uber. But, you know, capitalism, cost savings, right? But I think the most frustrating part of that process, of that exchange, was the fact that none of the geniuses on that panel there challenged him. Just once, when one of these goddamn free market, right wing, white wing, libertarian, teabagging Republicans trots out this horse manure, just once, I wish there was somebody on the panel that would just look at him and go, "Are you high?" Or maybe in Aqua Buddha's case, "How high are you? I mean, are you like one hit of bubblegum kush high, or did you just smoke a Philly blunt full of the stuff?" Because people, one, you can't hardly price compare because it's not like there's a Chinese restaurant menu outside St. God's Memorial. But two, you want adequacy of care. We can only give you about a 1 in 100 shot of surviving our rusty knife surgery here. But you know what? We're only going to charge you $116 for it. We're just gonna put you. I mean, you're not gonna get a room or anything. We're just gonna put you out back until the bleeding slows down, and then we're gonna call you an Uber home. But again, that's only gonna be $72. I mean, that place over there where they like use sterile instruments and stuff, and have actual rooms, and they pay nurses, and the nurses have a union, and the doctors are board certified. I mean, that's just. Look, I mean, those are just frills. I mean, you might, you know, have a better chance of living through the process there and surviving your illness and the treatment for it. But hey, is that what you really want, or do you want to save money? You know, we're all supposed to be aware, alert, woke AF sort of medical patients. Maybe the most important question to ask any doctor you go to is, "Hey, doc, you a libertarian?" And if they say yes, turn around and walk out. Because that's nothing more than a hedge fund manager day trader type who's allowed to use knives on people. For all you know, they go in to take a libertarian would go in to take out your appendix, and go, "You know, there's an extra kidney laying in there. Hey, see if anybody needs a kidney." That guy'll never miss it. It's worse than that urban legend about the guy who. Takes the woman back to the hotel room and wakes up in a bath of ice and looks on the mirror and sees it written in red lipstick, "Call 911, you know, because she's burglarized one of his kidneys. But how much difference is there? Brother Deacon Asus is They should just take what you said about price comparing for emergency services, roll it up into a baseball bat, and smack that bastard upside the head with it. Oh, let's see. Note coming in from David in South Carolina, Stan. Subject line, health choice. Is that not what all people want? To be faced with a myriad of insurance plans to choose from? A deadline to make that choice with dementia slowly setting in? Yeah, there's another one. That's fun. That's fun. How, because as part, as maybe question number two after question one, are you high to Rand Paul is, hey, Rand, buddy, how's an Alzheimer's patient gonna price compare? Just be interested in kind of, you know, knowing that there, Randy, Paul, wondering, right? Going back to our coffee discussion, note coming in from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, subject, future ads we're gonna see, coffee, it used to taste pretty good. Now Sanka's got caffeine. Damn good shit for coffee. It's a hot morning beverage. And brown, too. Wake up on the sunny side. It ain't tea. Regards, Steve in China. Sanka, now with caffeine. Right, yeah. But see, that the it's a hot morning beverage and brown, too. That's most decaf. Most, because most decaf tastes like melted brown crayon in hot water. If you have to, if you ever happen to have to switch to decaf, you might not like me for saying this, but McDonald's is your best bet. It actually tastes like coffee. Do not buy decaf at Wendy's. Don't get decaf at, you know, Carl's Jr. or Hardee's or Taco Bell or, no. If you're out on the road and somebody needs decaf, go to McDonald's. Be nice to them. Because the rest of it's crap. I'm just saying. Yeah, see, and that's probably the way, Carol, that's probably the way Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist's mind works, too. Carol says, that's the beauty of it. In a reasonable amount of time, the Alzheimer's patient will forget he's sick. But hey, we've got hope. A fifth senator added his name to the list of people who just can't vote for this health care bill. Heller of Nevada, who offered a stirring criticism of the bill. Interestingly, he's one of only 8 Republican senators up for re-election this year. And way back when we were talking about how damn near impossible it is to retake the Senate in 2018, we did mention Heller as one of the people who might otherwise be vulnerable. Noted Republican moderate Susan Collins, moderate in name only, is also up for re-election. No, she's not up for re-election. Susan Collins of Maine? But Jeff Flake is in Arizona, Stan. Ted Cruz is in Texas, Stan. There's a senator up for re-election in Mississippi, Stan, but he can vote with Mitch McConnell because Mississippi, Stan. But Cruz will, you know, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. Remember, he's the one who's saying that he can't vote for the bill. Because because he's a Christian, because it doesn't treat people It doesn't treat poor people shitty enough. Because if his God wanted poor people to have insurance, well, they wouldn't be poor people, now would they? God has that kind of power. But he's up for re-election. And, you know, the people of Texas will probably return him to office. Be nice if they wouldn't, but still. So the count now is Rand Paul, Rafaelito Cruz, Ron Johnson, Heller, and what, Rob Portman? But anybody who wants to rest on their laurels and say, well, we've got this one in the bag, you don't know that. You know, we make a lot of turtle jokes about chinless Mitch McConnell. But that sucker gets reelected time after time after time. And he's pretty much, I mean, as I said last night, he's miles away more intelligent than, Paul Ryan. And because he doesn't, and because he's got a much smaller group to have to strong arm, he can do so much more effectively. And I'm sort of, I'm skeptical. Because I remember when the AHCA was passed by the House, and went over to the Senate, and the for-profit media brought us soundbite after soundbite after soundbite of senators saying, well, you know, that thing's dead on arrival over here. We're not going to touch this thing. That thing, my God, that thing's a turd. And, you know, the thing about stirring shit is the more you stir, the more it stinks. And this thing stinks enough as it is. And this thing won't see the light of day. And then, lo and behold, they're talking about voting on this little bastard before the 4th of July. So I'm a little less than convinced when they tell me that, oh, well, you know, I mean, there's not the votes just aren't there. Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp by themselves can make up two Republican votes just by cravenly going up over to Mitch McConnell's office and rolling over on their quizzling backs and waiting for Mitch to either kick them or scratch them in the fun spot on their little soft bellies. And don't think they won't do it. You see some stupid shit when you spend the day reading news stories. And one of the ones that just knocked my socks off was, surprise, Senate health care bill may not solve opioid problem. What person who crawled out from under a bell jar in the Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium thought it would? Jeebus. No, the opioid. Look, here's the Republican approach to the opioid crisis. Let's quit funding treatment for it, and then all the opiate addicts will die, and then we won't have an opioid crisis anymore. Oh, wait, what? The addicts are white people?
shit. You get the idea.
So, you know, here is the week comes to an end. We are not without stuff. To discuss. And so I'm hoping that the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Forum will be, Roundtable Forum, will be every bit as scintillating as it usually is. A reminder, you know, of course, if you've never done it before, if you've never, and you want to get over your shyness and get into the conversation, just send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and he'll get you in, he'll get you into the conversation. If you absolutely need a telephone line to do it with, because we can't, I can't bring phone lines into, and remember, don't call me on Skype. I can't bring you into the conversation. Only Sparky can, because he is a spacing guild master, and he can fold space that way. He can fold you all into the ship, and then there we are, orbiting Arrakis. But if you absolutely need a phone line, then the stress line is here for you. 304-663-4676. 304-663. Horn, and the Skype group will hear you, you'll hear the Skype group, everybody will hear me, I'll hear everybody, and everybody out there will hear all of us. Work, work. All right, so it's 2 minutes past the hour. We have gone the first hour of this Friday on the Front Porch, and it looks like we're going to be playing the Friday on the Front Porch miracle game after all, because we've still got $305 to fundraise to finish the week okay and move toward the end of June and nudging the Norsky and licking the Lithuanian and keeping this all the little plates spinning in the air. So break time. Time for the round table. This is listener-supported conversation radio, radio like no other. This is The Horn.
Soothe my head. You had me down.
It just occurred to me that Robert Palmer had a thing for medical references in his music. On the one hand, you've got Doctor, Doctor, Give Me the News, I Got a Bad Case of Loving You. And then, of course, there's also, you know, Addicted to Love. I don't know if that song's deemed inappropriate now. Let's run over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. By the way, the stress line is still open if you want to use that. It's open for somebody, only one. But let's check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
100 degrees over there?
It was moving to 109 today, but it never got to 112 yesterday. But the damn wind made it feel like when you opened the sliding glass door and walked outside, you were walking into a full-body hairdryer.
Oh yeah, when the hot wind, but it's a dry heat, right?
Yeah, 10% humidity. Can't get much drier than that.
No, that's you don't even know if you sweated, do you?
Oh, you're sweating this heat.
Well, I mean, you sweat, but it's gone before it's. You never have a chance to really get wringing wet.
No, you don't get wringing wet in this kind of weather. I mean, after 40 years of working in it every summer, I know.
Does that make something like heat stroke more likely?
Yeah.
I mean,
I suffered a heat stroke once.
Nasty business.
Yeah, I had to go to the hospital get fluids and everything.
Well, because you know the whole purpose of sweating is for the sweat to condense and cool the body and all of that stuff. And if the sweat just dries up, not much cooling taking place, is there?
No, but you learn you got to consume fluids all the time.
Oh, even in last and see, I've never lived anywhere for any long period of time, anywhere that wasn't humid. So I'm kind of used to the wringing wet, dripping wet with sweat kind of effect. But I'm looking forward to the weekend because what was supposed to be just absolutely soggy is now looking like mostly sunny. So I'm going to get to try out the new hat. I got a new hat.
A sun hat?
Yeah. I mean, it's got the whole... You know, the thing that comes down over the back. It looks like sort of a bush version of a hat that maybe Darth Vader would wear.
Okay.
Because it's got this huge brim, and it just covers you completely, and the thing hangs down the to protect my painfully white neck, and yep, it's gonna get its first baptism of sun tomorrow.
Do you still smoke cigarettes, Bob?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I heard you mention it a few times.
Oh, yeah, I'm a junkie.
Are you eating again? Because I know you said something about eating grapes the other day.
Well, last night. Yeah, I'm trying, you know, no, I'm not back to my old bad habits or anything. And I'm still eating a lot of yogurt, cottage cheese, things like that. But I'm working some fruit into the diet and... I have soup with some like little hunks of chicken and vegetables in it and stuff, and I'm okay with that.
Okay, well, hopefully you'll get back to normal pretty soon, you know.
Well, I mean, as long as I can keep my strength up and everything, this has proven to be a pretty good thing. I mean, not diabetic anymore. Lost a ton of weight. Couple of pants sizes. It's you know, well, there is some lemonade out of lemons aspect to it all, and maybe if I continue in this vein, the stuff that was firing me up won't fire me up anymore, and I won't have to worry about needing $200,000 worth of surgery that I can't afford and don't have coverage for.
Yeah, right. Especially now, you know. And I was gonna say, you're like a tall guy, right?
You know, I could never make this. I could never try out for small forward on a basketball team. I'm 6'2".
Oh, okay. Because I'm 5'7". I heard you say the other day that I think I heard you say that you're like over 6'2" or something like that. I'm 5'7". I'm a short guy. So your pant size is, I guess, your waist size is your length didn't change is where I'm getting at, but your waist is
right. The waist is going down. The length is remaining the same. So I've gone from at the very worst a 44 waist and 32 length. I'm down now into a 32.
Wow, that's a big jump.
And I'm going, well, the goal is to get down to 34. That's high school, senior, college, freshman.
Well, you know what? It sounds like you're getting healthier because, you know, losing weight is never a bad thing. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, that you were obese or anything, but it's never a bad thing to lose weight.
No, I was carrying too much, and there's no getting around the fact that what I do here contributes to that because it's very easy to fall into this into this habit where you just sit here in front of the screen reading stuff. And you read.
That's a hard job.
And you just
read.
I don't
see how you do it.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to crawl up on the cross or anything. No, bricklaying is a hard job. Crawling around running electrical wire through conduit like Sparky did for decades, that's a hard job.
Oh, yeah. But, like, to look at these crazy, the madness has to, I can't even turn on TV because fear of seeing Batman on the TV because that man is always on the TV every single day and it's anxiety inducing. Sometimes I stay away from the news. You know, if something pops up on my computer screen, like breaking news, I look away and I say, I can't see it. I can't see it. You know, because it's one thing after the other.
Well, that's why this morning I was bouncing back and forth between Tom Hanks and Leo DiCaprio in Catch Me If You Can, the remake, and, you know, Morning Jerk.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. But, you know, I just want to say something real quick, I'll stop talking for a while. But, like, what I wanted to say the other night is, like the media caught on to this thing that the Republicans kind of sort of strategized, in my opinion, when he picked his cabinet or the people that he plucked out of their seats, they made sure that they made it a point that they were safe Republican districts, very safe districts. They would not have appointed people that came from swing districts. That would be strategically nonsensical. So. And a lot of people, I think, forget that the House is up for re-election every 2 years. So these Republican seats just went Republican eight months ago. So why would they flip the Democrat out of the blue so quick? You know, so it's just the Republicans want people to think that their agenda is more popular than it is. And they want people to think, oh, we win elections because we're so damn popular. The American people agree with what we're doing when that's not the case. And the people in the media, it's either they're stupid or they're pushing this propaganda narrative that they put out there. And that's
well,
my
and,
soapbox.
And, you know, I guess I was kind of grim on Wednesday, John. I said, you know, moral victories still go in the L column. And I stand by that. But there is something there. I mean, there is something to say in the fact that, you know, let's see, six, seven, 8 months after a general election in which, in both cases, Tom Price and Mick Mulvaney were swept to victory by overwhelming numbers, that their replacements were winning by 5 and 3 percentage points. So,
yeah.
I mean, now, that's just an anomaly unless somewhere along the way you see that repeated in the same districts over and over again. Unless
right.
you see progress, it was just a blip. It was just a statistical, it fell within the overall margin of error or whatever. And, if the re-election in South Carolina and Georgia, if Karen Handel wins in 18 by 20 points, well, you know, we'll know what that was about.
Right. Well, and, you know, is it crazy that I get really, really scared when I see him still doing campaign rallies?
No, it's out there.
It's bizarre. And what's scary about it is that people show up to this crap, you know, and they actually cheer him on. And like the other day at the Iowa thing, I saw in the back of him that there was a bunch of young women that were there. It's like,
there was one young woman back behind him with her MAGA hat on. If you were looking at the screen, she was back to the right of him.
Yeah.
And she was just sitting there grinning like somebody had just loaded her up with ecstasy right before the thing started. Just kind of had that.
Oh, yeah.
Just had that sort of robotic.
Those crowds are hand-picked.
Oh, yeah.
And she looked all of 15, too.
She's probably the daughter of some big.
Yeah, donor type. Right.
Buckety muck.
And, of course, the other thing they didn't show is the rest of the crowd, because we know in Pennsylvania and Tennessee and that his more recent rallies, he's not packing rooms anymore.
Yeah, because the election is over and people just kind of say, there's people that one of my friends is actually a really ardent Trump supporter. I mean, he was an original Trump supporter. We're talking the day after he came down that elevator or escalator or the week of, he had a Trump sign in his yard, one that was still toxic. But he even said, I said, are you going to the Trump rally back in April 29th when he came to Nuremberg, I mean, Harrisburg? And my friend said, no, the election's over. He's like, I like him, but I mean, why would I waste my time? You know, but real quick, I just wanted to apologize to the female members of the Horn family the other day when I made the comment about the big, you know, the big tits or whatever on that one woman. It was just kind of offhanded, and I didn't mean to, like, that was, I realized later on that was a very misogynistic thing to say. And it was just kind of, I had a Bill Maher moment. Kind of, you know what I mean? It just kind of popped in my head because
I wasn't raking you over the coals by pointing it out. I just, I'd like for us to, one, it's very big of you to say you made a mistake, and I don't think there was any evil intent inferred upon your part.
No.
But it's a good thing to be able to admit when we screw up. And I've done it, and you know, that's, well, it's a hallmark of the geniality and grace, I think, of this little community that we've put together. So thank
you. If I had a dime for every toe I munched on, Bob would own his own radio broadcasting station.
Yeah, complete with tower and terrestrial signal and all of that, right? Right, Steve?
Yes, sir.
But, at least you didn't have to eat crow this week. Steve, and I didn't have to go to jury duty.
Well, that's one time I wish I could have ate crow. I was going to call in and find some sound effects with some bone crunching and do it proudly on the air, but I kind of know how Bob felt when he predicted Trump's victory and all the other people. It's not a fun place to be, is it, Bob? It's not where you want to be.
No, but by the same token, you can say to yourself, look, I know what I'm talking about. I get it. I understand I understand the American electorate.
And it's in my notes here, and it's a good place to pivot right now. Every commercial, and I'm in the belly of the beast, so I've seen all these commercials. They ran nonstop. They compared Ossoff to Nancy Pelosi. I mean, they paired him up, you know, as evil villains. If you vote for Ossoff, you're voting for Nancy Pelosi and her liberal agenda.
And they eat babies.
And they eat babies, which begs the question, and I'm going to throw this out to the Horn family to weigh in. Do you think it's time for Nancy Pelosi to step down? And I have the utmost respect for this woman. I mean, she's done a lot of great things, but, I mean, how much more of this can we take?
Well,
you got to get the people of San Francisco to vote her out.
But it's really not fair to her. I mean, it's kind of a quandary that I find myself in my thinking process.
Well, but there's two things at work here. One, there's something in that whole Nancy Pelosi, a liberal baby eater who hates Jesus. There's something in that that smacks of, I don't know, something from a Joel Chandler Harris tale. And you, being from Georgia, know who Joel Chandler Harris was. You know, Brer Rabbit, Brer Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And Please Don't Throw Me in That Briar Patch.
Yeah.
Okay. Because then Comrade Kumquat turns around and says, well, I kind of like it that Nancy Pelosi's there. She's great for Republicans. We're 5-0 against her. It, because, you know, because he's a child, okay? He's a toddler. He's everything's something that happens on the playground to him. But, bear this in mind. Let's just play a little game here, Steve.
Okay.
Name a Democratic member of the House. Any Democratic member of the House.
Are you asking me personally?
Yeah. Just name a Democratic member of the House.
You kind of put me on the spot here, Bob.
Well, it's not like Nancy Pelosi's the only one.
Yeah, well, sure. There's
we got a lot of them in California.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not a test to find out if you know who all the Democrats are in the House. Just
civics question.
No, just give me the name of some other Democrat in the House of Representatives.
All right, I'll just throw one out because she's been in the news so much lately. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you know.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz is the biggest goddamn godless, Christ-hating, liberal, filthy, baby eating, goddamn disgusting Democrat, and fill in the blank here, is going to take his marching orders from her.
And thank you, Jug of Punch, Jenny Hoyer. I mean, I know all this, but I never did good at pop quizzes, so.
Yeah, but I mean, you can take the the guy who's politicking for Nancy Pelosi's job. Tim Ryan. Oh, wow. You know, we'll have a lot more luck with running candidates if Tim Ryan is the minority leader in the House. Well, here's the 2018 ads. Tim Ryan is a godless communist who hates Jesus and loves communism. And
who was schooled by Nancy Pelosi.
And fill in the blank here. Will take her orders from Tim Ryan, America. Yeah, goddamn, are we that? I'm not barking at you, Steve. Are we that fucking simple on this side? Okay, you know, for years and years, as long as he was alive, whoever ran for president on the Democratic ticket, from Walter Mondale forward, the biggest liberal in the United States government, short of Ted Kennedy.
Okay. And why is liberal such a bad word? I mean, how did we devolve to this?
Well, kind of late to ask that question, being as how
I know.
Yeah, it, I mean, liberals, yeah, that goes back to Reagan, okay? Liberal is code for doesn't want to keep those people in their place. Because remember, whoever those people are, be they gays, women, black people, Hispanics, gay, Muslim, whatever, those people. It goes all the way back to 1980 when Reagan was kicking off his campaign there in Neshoba County, Mississippi, and dog whistling the entire country that, I mean, you know, there's the only reason you kick off a campaign in Neshoba County, Mississippi, and that's if you want the Klan vote. Which he did.
But I guess my overall question, Bob, going back to the original point, is does Nancy Pelosi, does she need to do some soul searching and put the overment, the overall better, I don't want to say the party because I'm not a party person, but the overall better of principle above herself? Does that make sense?
I don't know where she's done anything wrong. You know why they hate Nancy Pelosi? Because she has done something right. She has done something that a speaker or a minority leader in the House is supposed to do. Namely, she has effected party discipline. Okay? Usually, I mean, Democrats like to, they like to be butterflies. Butterflies just fly around wherever they want to, and they land wherever they want to, and they flap their little wings, and they fly away in some other unpredictable direction. And Nancy Pelosi has said, no, we are not going to cave in to that orange monstrosity. He's crazier than a sprayed roach, and we are going to oppose every goddamn thing he does. And the first person that steps out of line, I'm going to slap back into the 19th century. And they know she will.
But as far as taking back the House, is she toxic?
No.
That's the question I'm
no, she's not
there.
Toxic. Okay. I mean, if she's toxic, it's only because there's a gumpty bajillion dollars worth of dark money out there to make her toxic.
Right.
Okay.
My mom, before she got all this Alzheimer's crap, she hated Nancy Pelosi. I'm like, why, Mom? Why do you hate her? And she couldn't give me she couldn't come up with a viable reason why she hated her. She just did. Because of all this crap Fox News and all these media organizations have been throwing at her. And I don't know if we're being brainwashed or what.
Yeah,
they call it
is. It's the Hannity Limbaugh effect, okay?
Yeah. Gaslighted it, or I don't know.
I stubbed my toe today. God damn Nancy Pelosi.
And Mom never had an unkind word about anybody. And I was shocked. But, you know, I think a lot of people are being, especially here in the South, are being gaslighted.
Well, you know, yeah, I think gaslighted is probably an okay term. But it's more like they are subjected to a media onslaught in which, I mean, it's like in many ways, it's Stalinist, okay? The Republican approach to media is Stalinist. Insofar as there can be only one point of view. That's how, and this is a separate conversation, but, you know, that's how we got where we are. Because Rush Limbaugh got on the air, and it was, and his success bred the success of Hannity and O'Reilly, and Fox News itself comes along as a result of the success of Rush Limbaugh. But the thing is, all of them are only successful as long as they are the only thing available for consumption, okay? I mean, you know, you live, I guess you qualify as the Atlanta market. How many local liberal talkers are there on, say, WSB AM 750?
There are none.
Zero.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the other? What's the other big liberal, or what's the other big talk station in Atlanta? W, something.
PUN. They've spun off.
There was one with it. Yeah, how many liberal talkers on that one?
None.
One
with Ken Peterson and all that bunch. Yeah, zero.
And guess what? The same thing is true in the Birmingham market. The same thing is true in the Nashville market, as Charlie can tell us. The same thing is true in the Lexington, Kentucky market, the Memphis market, the Charlotte market, the Columbia and Charleston markets, the Jackson, Mississippi market, the Mobile, Alabama market, the New Orleans market, and practically every radio market in the United States.
And that's because Clear Channel and Salem Radio monopolized everything when everything got deregulated.
Well, to a certain extent, yes, but it's also because ideologically, they cannot tolerate an opposing viewpoint. If you, now, this is not to say, okay, and I want to be really clear about this. This is not to say there have never been liberals in southern markets. But I've said for years that in many ways, and you know, you're southern, they're more so than I am, Steve, and there, we got a bunch of behind the corn pone curtain folks in this community. If you're a southern liberal, or if you're a southern middle of the roader, okay, you are not, and I'm sorry, this is sectional and this is regional and it's a little bit snotty and shitty and southern, but all of those things are applicable to, you know, southerners. They're not gonna take their marching orders from somebody who says, "Hello, this is liberal radio, and I'm here to tell you how to be a liberal."
But back in the day, Bob, 10, 15 years ago, Randy Rhodes was kicking Rush Limbaugh's ass head-to-head. The numbers were there.
She was on the air in Atlanta?
No, sir. She was in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Yeah, she kicked his ass in West Palm Beach, which ain't the South.
Yeah.
South Florida may be South Florida geographically, but it ain't the South, and anybody down there can tell you that.
No.
And I wasn't picking on Randy with the accent. No, I was talking about the ongoing, and I'll get emails saying, you know, goddamn stupid rednecks. And okay, but everybody likes to have a certain degree of validation in what they're listening to, okay?
It's called the echo chamber.
It's called confirmation bias.
Right.
Okay?
Affirmation.
And so people like to be confirmed in their bigotries. And that is what Hannity and Limbaugh, all of whom have nice broadcast standard, Midwestern, flat, presentation. You know, I wouldn't expect, for instance, to take my hillbilly ass up and broadcast in, say, Madison or Minneapolis or, God knows, San Francisco and have people respond positively to me, because it'd be like, you sound like some sort of dumbass redneck.
Well, take a car ride from D.C. to Atlanta, then head west out to California, and just keep your radio on scan and tell me how many progressive radio shows you'll pick up on.
None.
Zero.
I mean, maybe somewhere along the way you might get Tom Hartman.
We're horrible at messaging, and we've got to turn this around. We have got to turn this around. Bob, I'm going to toss it back to you for now. I appreciate you engaging me with this.
Oh, no. I mean, please don't apologize. I mean, I think it's a fascinating conversation. It's not that we're awful at messaging. We're great at messaging, Steve. Yeah. It's we're awful at funding the infrastructure. Okay? Just like in politics, we have no bench. You know, one of the nice things is, you know, a place like California has a bench. There's up-and-coming politicians who will someday replace, say, Nancy Pelosi. The way Kamala Harris, who is, let's remember, nowhere near sufficiently ideologically pure enough, we got to say that, just like she replaced Barbara Boxer. Okay? Someday there will be some Democrat who will replace Dianne Feinstein, who really isn't liberal enough.
She needs to retire now.
She needed to retire 10 years ago, Sparky. I mean, but you know.
Thanks, Don.
But the thing is, there was a decision made long, long ago that, oh, well, you know, we don't want to be like those people. They don't even know what to do with the small spoon. They don't know that it's used to get individual little sturgeon eggs of caviar out with that tiny spoon and put it on the toast point. Yeah, those, we don't want to be like those people who don't know that. We don't sit around listening to recherché barbarians like Rush Limbaugh. Far better that we remain silent.
Well, you know, Air America was an epic failure, but at least they tried, goddammit. And when you fail,
yeah, but
you
got
to get back up and try it again. I mean, we have to get our voices out there because we have the numbers. They may have the guns, but we have the numbers.
Well, you know, Steve, I'm sick of at least we tried.
Me too. I'm done to death. I'm done to death with that, Bob.
Maybe this shows me out to be, you know, an asshole.
Everywhere we turn, we're getting fucked. Their Supreme Court fucked. You know, our nomination got stolen from us. Okay, we got fucked. Our health care getting ready. I almost said fixing, but that's a Southern witticism, but you would have got it.
You can say fixing.
Our health care is fixing to get ripped out from under us, and we're going to go back to where it was pre-Obamacare, which was shit. I mean, everywhere we turn, these people are fucking us. And when's it going to be enough? When's it going to take enough? And I'm not talking violence in case, you know, Joe G.I. man is out there listening in. I'm not talking violent solutions or anything. But what's it going to take for us to turn this fucking thing around? It has to stop. Or we're going to end up losing our shirts.
Well, for starters, we need to quote Jeff Daniels, we need to stop losing so goddamn always. There's nothing like winning to turn things around. And, you know, we've seen it. We saw it in Clinton. We saw it in Obama, both. Mount a national campaign with a charismatic leader, and then and everything becomes about the charismatic leader, and things like Congresses go begging. So there's that. Secondly, what I was going to say a few minutes ago is maybe it marks me out as a bit of an asshole, but I never liked to hear "at least we tried" from my kids when they were growing up. This is not to say I was some sort of Captain Bly monster.
No, I get that. And Ossoff was a good man. He was clearly the better of the two.
Here's one of those "at least" things. You know, at least they didn't call him Jew boy. But you know, we're one more election cycle away from it, because I don't know how many times I heard on that nasty little program I watch in the morning the phrase, "He looks like something out of the cast of Warren Beatty's Reds." Okay, you have to know a little bit about the history of the Russian Revolution to know that a lot of the Bolsheviks were Jewish.
It doesn't take Einstein to connect those dots. I mean,
and you know,
they play dirty and they play to win. And do we need to start resorting to those tactics? If that's what it takes.
Well, if you want to win, I mean, you're never going to be able to run the nasty shit that they run against us.
Oh no, they would turn it around
we can play harder and we can play meaner and we can play dirtier. Let me throw one more thing in your direction.
Yes, sir.
The health care bill. You said we're about to lose our health care.
Right. Right now, we've got to put our faith in the likes of Rand Paul and Ted Cruz. And the only reason they're against it is it's not hateful enough.
Yeah, but let me turn that one on its side for a minute. What if I told you that the entire Republican caucus in the House, because you know every last one of those little bastards is up for re-election, and they're all not in safe districts like Steve Cantaloupe's King and Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Mo Brooks Less Brains in Alabama. What if I told you that every member of the Republican caucus is sitting there hoping and praying that the Senate bill goes down to defeat? What would you say if I told you that?
I'd say, really? I'm thinking that they're scared to death to go home on this July break, have faced their town meetings. And maybe that's because I'm hearing from the media. And maybe I'm way off base on that. My way of thinking is they want this shit to go through so they can be done with it, wash their hands, and say, it's law now. You know, go piss up a rope.
Uh-uh.
They won't do any. I know LaMotha won't do any more town hall meetings.
Well, that's not what after, people need
after,
to start.
Not after the one he had in Grass Valley, I'll tell you.
That's when people need to start showing up in their office in masses. All right, if you don't do a town hall meeting.
Well, they did that in Mitch McConnell's office, and they dragged people out of their wheelchair.
Yeah, I've seen that.
They dragged people out of their wheelchairs and dragged them down the hall.
I don't mean the Washington office, Bob, which is not a bad idea. I mean their local office as well. They have offices. Their offices are duplicitous.
Well, they'll call the dogs and fire hoses on you in Podunk as easily as they will D.C.
In Kentucky, yeah.
But no, let's follow this through for a minute because, you know, things, especially when you're dealing with Washington, D.C., things are not always as they seem. You know, remember, there are procedures there where, let's say, you're about to lose on a bill and the majority leader will vote against his own party for parliamentary reasons. It doesn't make any sense on its face, but it preserves a right in the long term. It happens all the time. So here you've got
Harry Reid used to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, every leader has done that because of the way the rules are written. So think about it. Think about it in these terms. You just mentioned the town halls and they're shitting kittens with crocheted tails at the idea of going home and facing the constituents. And most of them are such a bunch of cowards that they won't anyway. But the one thing that Democrats have going into 2018 that they can beat the Republicans over the head with is health care. Because it's really all they've talked about. People don't care enough about the environment to say, well, okay. I mean, if you ran ads saying Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell told fixed it so coal companies could dump more poisons in streams in Appalachia, hell, half the electorate here would be like, hell yeah, coal's coming back, son bitch. The only issue that Democrats have right now is health care. Representative X voted with Paul Ryan. Representative X is a sad little lick-spittle toe-sucker of Paul Ryan who does what he's told like the little lap dog he is, and Paul Ryan told him to take away your mama's health care. We can't afford another 2 years of Representative Lick-Spittle. Okay, you were talking about we going to play dirty? That's playing dirty, okay? That's playing mean, at least. Well, guess what happens if the health care bill goes down in flames over in the Senate? The entire Republican caucus in the House breathes a humongous sigh of relief, wipes a great big flop sweat off their brows, and realizes that they can sashay through the 2018 elections without being beaten up over health care because nothing happened.
So if I'm hearing you, you're saying you're hopeful that they'll take our health care away. So that'll give us a pivot point, something to fight about.
Oh, hell no, I'm not hoping that. I'm not hoping that. Jesus, I would not wish that on any.
I mean, ideologically, without anybody being hurt, Okay, let me rephrase that. What's your? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if I'm hearing you, this could be a useful tool for us to.
This is chess. This is chess. Okay? So nobody loses their health care. And the Republicans go back and they campaign in their districts for 2018 saying, well, you know, we... Because remember, they're talking to their base. They're talking to the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, Trumpanzees, libertarians, whatever. And they say, well, you know, we told you we was going to repeal and replace it, but them godless baby-eating Democrats stopped us. And a couple of mugwump Republicans in the Senate. We tried. God knows we tried. And we'll keep a trying, but we got to be there to try. You got to send us back in 18.
Well, I owe you an apology, Bob. I didn't mean that you wanted people to lose their health care. That's not what I was saying. What I was trying to say is, this will probably take a couple years for it to go their way that they want to go anyhow. And in the meantime, we could bang them over the head with what the hell they're trying to do to us.
Well, this is why I say that McConnell has a certain amount of genius. Yeah. He took something, and on the one hand, it does a lot of what the Republicans want to do because it fucks a lot of poor people. All right? But it doesn't fuck them real good until after 2021, after the inauguration of Donald Trump's second term, and after Mitch McConnell has been reelected to another term in the Senate from Kentucky, okay? So they can cruise through, you know, if this thing passes and the orange monster signs it, and they come to some sort of an agreement in conference committee with the House, and it goes to, and he signs it. Nothing really happens until 2021, so that they can go through two entire election cycles saying, see, we got rid of that Kenyan Muslim health care, and ain't nothing bad happened to you yet, has it?
After their victory celebration in the Rose Garden. But when if it sticks, when it hits home, is when people like you and I, Bob, are really going to need this Medicare thing.
Yeah.
We're the ones that are really getting bent over on this. And there are millions of us out there. I mean, we have got to band together somehow, some way, devise a plan, and push back against this.
Well, you know what? I go back, Steve, to my conversation with Paul from Parts Unknown toward the end of the program Wednesday. We've got to work toward unity. You know what? You can oppose the Republicans all day long, but if you cannot come together and say, listen, it is important to have people with D's after their names in the House and have enough D's, have more D's than R's, then all the ideological purity in the world ain't worth a hill of beans. Okay? We have to trust people in their own districts to vote the right way.
But right now they're not. They've all been gaslighted, and that's the problem. And that takes me back to my original point.
Let's go from Steve to Steve. Hey, Steve in New York.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
I apologize. I came onto the porch a little late. I was actually finishing up some work. And I know everyone just. What was the person who said that you don't tolerate dissent? I don't remember who said that. It was something along those lines. That we're all just mouthpieces.
No. You're sycophants.
Oh, right. I'm a sycophant. Okay, so I'm going to step outside of my sycophant role. Let me just start by saying and I'll piggyback off of something I posted on the Facebook page today.
Okay.
I am completely in favor of getting rid of Nancy Pelosi, getting rid of Charles Schumer, and all of the entire leadership, and here's why. So I'm in agreement with I think I heard where Steve from down in Georgia had put that on the table, and here's why. You know, I happen to be a lawyer with a finance background, so I'm all about the numbers. And since 2010, in the state legislatures, the Democrats have lost a net of over I think I calculated 638 seats. They've lost 63 members of Congress in the House. They've had a net loss of 12 senators and a net loss of 8 governors. It's been epic losses with this cadre of leadership, and that's a short period of time. That's only since 2010. And if essentially, if you go back to 92, that was really the bellwether, or actually not 92, but 94. And I can say this because back in my days as a staunch GOP person, and yes, I have a picture of Newt Gingrich and me in his office when he was speaker on my wall. From 94 forward, the Democrats have been absolutely decimated in the states and, frankly, at the federal government, with only brief, bright periods at the presidential level. And the fact of the matter is Bill Clinton never got a majority of the vote. And I understand there was a third party running. We've had two Republican presidents elected without a majority of the vote. We've had those epic losses that I talked about only since 2010, up and down the ticket across the board. And then in Clinton lost the House for the first time in 40 years. So I look at the people we have in charge, and it's basically been these centrists since 92. So I am all of the opinion that we need to get rid of Pelosi, we need to get rid of Schumer, and we need to get rid of every single member of the leadership throughout the Democratic Party at the local, state, and federal, at national level.
You could move to San Francisco and work to get rid of her.
Well, I think given what Bob said, that she knows how to whip people, she'd be a great whip. But I'm sorry, she is not a good national. You have two people from each of the coasts. You have an Italian Catholic woman who's head of the Democratic caucus in the House, and you have a Jewish man from New York who is head of the Democratic caucus in the Senate. Sorry, but those while they may be great at raising money, they may be great at whipping votes, that's not the face of the Democratic Party that you want nationally. You know, I had this conversation with my father today about this, and I'm of the opinion that we need to have a somewhere in the middle of the country being those two spokespeople. On the House side, I'm not sure. I tend to think that a great Senate minority leader would be Sherrod Brown from Ohio. He's from Ohio. He's a liberal. And I think he would be a great spokesperson. He would be very hard to tie or to vilify in the same way that you can with Schumer. Do I like that's the reality that we live in? No. But I think that's the reality that we live in. There's kind of the macro way of looking at it. The other thing, too, is you know, I happen to be reading Sun Tzu's Art of War, and I'm probably going to sound like I'm contradicting myself a little bit here, but I think we're playing too much on the GOP's turf. We need to be meaner, more ruthless, and uglier in politics than they are. Rather, you know, I was listening to Schumer talk today on the floor of the Senate about what this healthcare plan, well, let me rephrase that, what this latest tax cut plan will do. And, you know, he can go through this litany of things that's going to throw these people off Medicaid and do this and do this and do this, and those are all the policy arguments, I get it. But what I think the messaging needs to be, and this is right in exactly what Steve said, what the message needs to be is very simple. The Republicans want to kill people. Period.
Oh, but see, you're lacking in civility, Steve.
I don't give it. You know what? Great. And you know what? You know, civility gets you. Hey, great. We can be civil all we, excuse me, fucking want to, and we end up in second place. We end up with 678 net losses, a net loss of 678 seats in the state legislatures in only 8 years. And you know, Bob, you said it last week. You hit the nail on the head. Until Democrats want it, not as much as the Republicans, but want it more than the Republicans, get content with trying to constantly put, fingers in the dike. Until we are ready to actually play hardball and say, you know what, we're going to build a new dam, we're going to build a new dike, then then just be prepared for this constant minority status. I think I was listening to the Wednesday podcast today where you mentioned what and you said you weren't sure, you think it may have been apocryphal about LBJ run the ad of, you know, have you stopped, what was it, beating your wife, or have you stopped?
No, when did he stop having sex with farm animals?
Farm animals. Until we're ready to get there, until Democrats and how we went from LBJ to where we are now. Until we are ready to understand the difference between politics and policy, we're going to continue to be doing what we're doing.
Right. And see, some of this, Steve, is a function of who's advising the candidates. If you're a candidate and you look like you've got a fighting chance, a puncher's chance of winning, then suddenly the D.C. political pundit class will descend upon you, all right? And they will give you D.C. political advice. So somebody told John Ossoff, for instance, not to run on Trump. And he was, Steve from Georgia, Stan, you can verify this if it is true. There was very little out of John Ossoff about Trump. He was very sort of mild-mannered. He was very reasonable and just very neighborly and rational. And they called him a baby killing commie anyway. All right?
You're correct, Bob.
So, you know, some of that is about knowing who your electoral base is. Some of that is about knowing how to fire up the base. But I want to go back for a minute, because I'm not sure I'm completely on board with Nancy Pelosi must go. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm not. Because I don't know of anybody who can do the job she's doing. Tim Ryan is the obvious one who lusts for the job.
Where's he from?
Like Steubenville.
Okay.
Just outside Weirton and Wheeling. On the Ohio side, you know, St. Clairsville, okay. I guess.
Okay.
But he wants the job. He challenged her in the last caucus election. But you have to look at his creds and his history. He, in the past, has not hesitated to throw a woman's right to choose under the bus. And I'm sorry, in the aftermath of the failed one question national IQ test last November, we've had a lot of lecturing from people who really have no business lecturing about how we've got to get rid of identity politics. Well, I call bullshit on that, because another word for identity politics is civil rights.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's like, I'm all for the identity politics. It's rich versus poor. It's the 99% versus the 1%. I'm all for that.
And
that's what you're saying.
And I'm not, I'm not buying into this notion, and I've been consistent in this since November, And that's why I make a mockery with the reverb and everything of economic anxiety. Yeah, it's real and it exists. But in all too many cases in this last election, it was a fig leaf for plain old-fashioned garden variety racism, bigotry, homophobia, xenophobia, not neo-Nazism, etc. I don't necessarily know that I want a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant guy leading the Democratic Party in the House. I doubt if Auntie Maxine would want the job. There's a reason, you talk about she'd be a good whip. Well, no, a whip does the bidding of the speaker or the, in the case of the minority leader. I mean, you know, these things you worked on the Hill. What they don't, you know, the reason the Republicans are trying to push the Democrats to shove Nancy Pelosi out the windows is because she kicks them in the nuts and makes them like it. And she did it while she was Speaker of the House. You know, we tend to forget that there was some pretty impressive legislation passed by the Pelosi-led House that went over and died in the Senate because of people like Blanche Lincoln and Joe Manchin and Ben Nelson of Nebraska, okay? Nancy Pelosi was a pretty damn spectacular Speaker of the House. And to hear, the Republicans holler that, you know, they'll be nice to us if we'll only get rid of Nancy Pelosi, man, you know, I've been to a rodeo, and a number of dinners on the prayer meetings and dinners on the ground, and I ain't fallen for that one. Because they'll do the same, you know. It doesn't matter if it's, that's why I asked Steve from Georgia, Stan, about, you know, name a Democrat in the House. Doesn't matter if it's Tim Ryan. Doesn't matter if it's Elizabeth Esty. Doesn't matter if it's Emanuel Cleaver. Doesn't matter if it's Keith Ellison. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if it's Adam Schiff or Auntie Maxine or Peter Welch or anybody. Whoever leads the Democrats is going to be the demon du jour of the Republican, the Republican filth machine, period. I mean, do you see what I'm getting at, Steve?
I do, but I don't. But why make it easier for them?
How is this making it easy?
Because.
Oh God! Well, you know, hi folks, it's Larry. I finally decided to jump in. First of all, this stuff.
Hey,
about
Larry.
All this stuff about Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi has never been as weird or as far to the left as a, you know, that these people are talking about. I know that they're talking to a conservative base, but Nancy Pelosi basically has had people such as Cindy Sheehan run against her in San Francisco to the left. She didn't, and people in San Francisco have liked Nancy Pelosi and liked Democrats for decades. So this nonsense about going after this particular person because she happens to be high profile and Democratic is just a lot of bullshit. It's really a lot of bull fucking shit. I'm sorry. It really is. She's not, and I know Nancy Pelosi's daughter, and when Nancy Pelosi's daughter was the head of the platform committee, she's now the chair of the platform committee in the party. She's now the chair of the Women's Caucus of the Democratic Party, Christine Pelosi. She was regularly asking her mother and people in Congress whether or not some things that we would want in our platform, which were more liberal than the Congress was going, whether or not that would fly for members of Congress. She was interested in trying to craft a platform where the people in Congress could be able to run on it. And so, you know, I mean, and she's also been interviewed. She was also interviewed by and a guest on a number of talk show hosts' shows on Air America. So this nonsense about her being this super liberal person and baby eating and all that, and I know that's a lot of hyperbole to throw at the ignorant people, but, you know, I think, Steve, you're right. I think that it's important for us to try to turn the tide and get the message out so we can get more Democrats elected. But my question to you, Bob, after thinking about it for a number of years, and to everyone else here, you know, I live in a place where KPFA is, Bob.
Right.
KPFA is consistently asking for money and asking for money to keep on going, but they haven't, but they don't want to go outside their particular donor base because of, and they don't want to attract corporate sponsors and attract corporate gifts or corporate premiums because they don't want to change their message. Well, if you're KPFA and you keep on asking for money to keep on going, and you're asking the same group of people and you're not interested in expanding your message because you're frightened that your message is going to be watered down or going to have to be watered down to become like KQED, which is a public broadcasting station, where do you go from there?
Well, that's it. Can you all hear me?
Yeah, hey, Rick.
Yeah, Rick. Hey, Rick.
Yeah, hey. I was on Skype from the office, and I, decided I better switch to Skype at home, and maybe you saw a picture of my empty desk chair there earlier, but...
I did.
Yeah, yeah. You have a good point, Larry, about the KPFKs and the KPFAs, you know, the Pacifica stations, because, I mean, they've gotten to the point where they've started to alienate their own listeners by their constant fundraising appeals. And because they have to stay so pure, you know, they end up kind of getting in like a circle, you know.
I'll just say that a little bit of this is beginning to hit home because, you know, I get sick of the constant fundraising appeals here. I don't know what I would do if I could go on the air for five solid days and not have to mention fundraising. But the problem is that it's that or go off the air. Now, you know, Larry says that they don't want to take corporate gifts or anything. I understand that. But there's corporate gifts and there's corporate gifts. I would not, although I'm sure that somewhere out there in the Horn Family Community Congregation, there's somebody who can write me an email and say, "You sell out, motherfucker." I would gladly cash a check from Ben and Jerry's. Okay? I would, because, you know, there doesn't seem a lot to object to there, but I'm sure there's something that I've missed. But I like the fact that we can provide this community forum for people to talk, and God knows, I mean, it's a real community, okay? Now, I think if there was a sales department out there and they were selling insurance and you know, Exxon and gasoline and oh hell, let's just go ahead and take some money from the coal industry while we're at it, right? I would definitely be self-censoring. But you know, there are really would it be that toxic to Pacifica to take a corporate gift from Toyota to promote hybrid and electric vehicles? Well, I'm sure because of the I'm somewhat familiar with the programming. I'm sure that would present a problem from the ideological purity standpoint. But at some point in time, you reach a point when you're not funded by advertising, where you're either going to be true to yourself and true to what you're trying to do, or you're going to tear yourself to pieces trying to make everybody happy. I can't tell you since November the number of subscribers we've lost here, because I will not get behind this microphone and lie and say that I think Jill Stein farts sunshine and moonbeams. Okay? I won't do it.
It's sunbeam and moonshine.
I'm so disappointed, Bob. I thought she did.
But I mean, it has come at a substantial cost. The people who've gone away from the conversation because I would not stomp my feet and declare that Hillary Clinton is in fact the devil. And perhaps the fact that I mocked some of that, too. Okay?
You got the reverb, Bob.
That has come at a cost. But, yeah, it does strike home because, you know, and by the way, 10 after 8 here, 10 minutes into the third hour of the programming, and I have not yet thanked Charlene for taking us down to, let me do the math real quick. Yeah, taking us down to $255 to go in fundraising this evening.
Ah, damn.
And it's, no, thank you. It would be $305, okay? I mean, I can't overstate that. And I realize this is a tough model. Any listener support model is a tough model because somewhere along the way you have to, yeah. And look, since we're talking about it, and I'm not trying to just turn this into one long goddamn pitch, because it's not. But the fact of the matter is, the people who support this program versus the people who just listen to it, the people who support this program are a fraction of the people who listen. Okay?
Could I throw out a number for you?
Okay.
Since I'm the keeper of the chat room.
Yeah.
2,352 people have signed into the chat room over the years.
And that's just the incredible. Chat room.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. What we serve out live, what we serve out in all the various forms of the podcast. Somebody said the other day, I think on Facebook, you know, if everybody who listens to this program would send a damn dollar, fundraising would be over every month on the first day of the month.
We got to keep this going. Yeah. I mean,
well, Bob, the question is, you were talking about we have to get more D's elected in Congress, but if you have more D's, if they're just slightly to the left of where the Republicans are coming from, because the Democratic Party leadership doesn't want to alienate people because they think they're going to drive more people to vote for Republicans, and they do that, then how are you ever going to get more Sanders kind of Democrats, or dare I say Jill Stein type Democrats, into the Congress to be able to effectively out-message this onslaught of, you know, it's been getting worse and worse and worse over the last 30 to 40 years since Reagan. The Republicans, I mean, it's a juggernaut. It's like the Dallas Cowboy football team in the 1960s or the Green Bay Packers, where nobody could beat them. And they just kept on, they just kept on winning and winning and winning and winning until, you know, can anybody answer me, you know, Steve from New York or Steve from Georgia or Bob, or, you know, how are you going to get more liberal folks, you know?
Well, first of all, Larry, I'll field that question and everybody else can jump in after I say thank you to Alma, who said, hope this helps you sell out. Thank you, Alma. so now we've got $205 to go in fundraising for the evening. The first
you sell
thing,
out for $50, Bob. That's awfully cheap. You're off. Your purchase.
Well, we
price
all know
is
what I am now. We all know what I am. We're just haggling over the price. Okay.
I'm sorry. That was right over the plate, Bob. I couldn't help it.
Yeah.
No, believe me, the first thing that has to happen, Larry, is we have to convince people that we're right. And that hasn't happened. And some of the places that it hasn't happened are kind of shocking. You would think that free college tuition, access to health care, and policies that are more humane toward working people, man, you'd think that'd just go over, that'd go over like free cornbread in the South. Guess what? It doesn't. Okay? For instance, Joe Manchin, and we all spit on the ground at the mention of that man's name. I heard him say that, well, I can't support that Bernie Sanders idea of free college tuition. You're just going to let somebody go to college who hadn't had to work for it? They're not going to value something that they get for free. And free health care? Well, people just be going to the doctor all the time. I heard him say that.
You know, I value, I complain a lot, Bob, but I value what I get from this system. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm sorry to say it to people, because I don't have their mindset, but I feel I deserve more than what I get. I don't believe I'm getting enough. Now, I know that sounds like it's like I'm entitled. I know that that sounds like I'm being spoiled, but that's how I, but that's how I view it. Whether or not we convince people that we're right, you have to be able to understand that in order for them to believe that we're right, they have to believe it inside themselves first. And if they don't start out with the same assumptions and the same presumptions about what they think that, you know, about, you know, if they don't start out from the same place that we're starting from, it's going to be very, very difficult to convince them that these things work for them, especially when they've heard all their lives the opposite, or especially when experience has told them otherwise. I don't know. I don't know if I'm making sense. But from what I understand, I was listening to Richard Wolff yesterday, his program Economic Update, and he was saying that the California State University system, which I graduated from, not UC Berkeley, not UCLA, but the California State University system, they're cutting back on, they're already cutting back on the expenditures that they're per pupil. And that's the state university system is the system for people who aren't really the blue bloods. So I don't know. I'm getting myself mixed up in it, in concepts and thoughts. But you know, I value you know, I value what I get, and I think I deserve.
Yeah, and you do, you do. There are countries where you would have more, and you've got it. And but Larry, this is related to conversations we've had in the past. And this is going to come across as lecturesome, and I don't mean it that way. You've got it better there than I would say probably 95% of the disability community in the entire rest of the country.
You're right on that.
But you're also lagging behind what disabled people have in other civilized countries.
Yeah, like Scandinavia or, you know...
Yeah, you know, Sweden, they'd probably give you free skis for your chair. That was a joke.
I understand. But I'll tell you something. I'm grateful for Mercedes. And she's been with me for a really long time. And I would, you know, so, you know, I'm glad that she's here. And I'm grateful for, you know, I complain a lot. There isn't anybody in this world, I think, that complains probably more than I do. But the reality is that I do have some really good things, and Mercedes is one of Mercedes is one person in my life that's stuck here, you know, stuck by me here and worked with me and works really, really hard for very little money. Everybody works hard, but she works really hard for very little money. And yeah, you're right. In California, we get more. But, you know, they're getting tough here. So, in any case, I'm not saying anything important right now, so I'll just be quiet and let other people speak.
Well, let me...
But
let
I just wanted...
Go ahead.
But I just wanted to let Steve, you know, to let Steve in New York and let Steve in Georgistan know that I'm, you know, that I'm with them, and I'm frustrated that a station or a network like KPFA or, you know, and... Even some programs on PBS don't reach the areas where you are, and I don't know. If I lived in those places, I probably wouldn't even know that a Pacifica Foundation
existed.
Network existed.
Right.
Or
no, no.
Like
you got to understand. In a place like West Virginia, West Virginia Public Radio is a bunch of commie damn liberals. Okay, I mean, I'm talking about Prairie Home Companion and What Do You Know and reruns of Car Talk and All Things Considered and Morning Sedition and all of that stuff. Y'all, that's commie. Okay, if people in West Virginia got KPFA or well anything Pacifica, they'd probably be in the streets looking for the tower to burn it down.
Yeah,
because to go back to one of your premises, Larry, the reason progressivism worked under FDR is because people were starving. People had no work. People had no food. All of a sudden, anything that wasn't what had put them in that spot looked pretty damn good. To the point that, you know, the original Social Security was not FDR's idea. He watered down a socialist idea in order to save capitalism. But most people don't understand that. And if you told it to them straight up, they wouldn't believe you. Okay, I mean...
The disability community watered down the ADA so that it would appeal to businesses. Otherwise, they wouldn't get the business, you know, the Americans with Disabilities Act.
I mean...
And when we... Yeah, oh, sorry to interrupt, Bob.
Well, no, I was just going to add on to that. We have a Martin Luther King Jr. holiday because the person who wanted it most sold it to the business community that it would be a Monday holiday, a long weekend, and they could have MLK Day sales and car lot specials. And all of a sudden they, oh, really? We could? Well, that sounds, you know what? I believe in judging a man by the content of his character, not the character, not the color of his skin. Right? Yeah. Come on down to our big MLK Day sale down here at Harry's Used Cars. Right? So you get that. Let me say we're making some progress. Thank you very kindly to Renee and to Steve and Ms. Karen and Twiggy and little Miss Cletus. Cletus and Twiggy are good puppies. We got $170 to go in fundraising to finish the week now. So I guess we're gonna be in a mad dash for the next 38 minutes to see what we can do. But you've got to change attitudes. And so far, we have not proven any good at that.
Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Steve. I actually think Larry just illustrated a point. You mentioned the ADA being watered down. But here's the point, and here's where the Sparkle Fart Brigade is just a bunch of fucking numbnuts. Sometimes you have to water down. God, I'm sounding like Hillary here, and I was not a Hillary bot. Sometimes you have to water down because you got to at least get your foot in the door. You can't say, well, you know what? I want to move in rather than just getting my foot in the door. Well, we got our foot in the door with the ADA. And I think the unfortunate thing is that sometimes, I guess, things take time. And that rather than saying, well, I can't have everything now, then I don't want it all, you know. And, you know, I'm not a disabled person, so maybe I look at that as saying, well, how do I say this? It's not as personal to me because it doesn't directly impact me, so I can say something like that. Well, you know, we got this, and we'll have to work on it. Work on it diligently until we get where we want to be. And I understand that a lot of people may look at that and said, yes, but what about right now? But I'll tell you, I find that once you get in the door, things, my impression that things tend to happen more quickly than you think, than you might think. And I think of like GLBT rights. I remember 10 years ago, or when I went to law school in 2000, from 2000 to 2003, and Bob will understand what I'm saying with this. In 2000, 2003, it was still the law of the land that you could prohibit people from, we'll just call it, intimate relations, even then. And within a few years, that got overturned with Lawrence versus Texas. And a few years, the immigration rules changed. And I guess what I'm saying is that once you're able to say, okay, we'd like to go here, but we can go here, and then I get your point,
Steve. And let me say that within modern social justice movements, the LGBTQQQ movement has been a damn beacon in the darkness as far as providing a model of success. Some of that is the we're here, we're queer deal with it. You know, we ain't going away. The militancy. But another part of it, if I may dare to sound so centrist, is that it is an issue where people can reach across the aisle. Because there are gay Republicans. You know, the log cabin guys and girls.
Nut balls as they are.
Yeah.
I used to be one of those, and I...
yeah, the log closet Republicans, right.
Yeah.
And so even though the party itself was having a hissy, there was some amount of groundswell that was formed by the fact that there were people on the other side who wanted civil rights as badly as anyone.
But you know what? I think at least as far as LGBT stuff goes, this is where the whole and again, maybe this is very unique to the LGBT movement, is that when people started coming out of the closet, it kind of made people go, oh, you know, and you had people on all sides of the, in any side of the spectrum, when they began to realize that, oh, shit, that's my friend there who I'm seeking to screw. I mean that in the figurative sense. It was much harder, even for a right winger who I think part of the right wing mind is to not have empathy other than for people that you know. It was harder to be against something like marriage equality when it was your cousin, your nephew, your neighbor. Where I mean, when it was somebody down the street or one of those people over there, it was much harder, much easier. When it became everywhere, then it was much harder. But I think the point is that sometimes, or not sometimes, but we have tended to. We've gotten really bad at the whole, if I can't have it all, I don't want anything, and I'm just going to wait. And this goes right along with the whole sparkle fart stuff. It goes right along with, well, I can't have Bernie, so I'm not even going to have Hillary. And I listen to you a lot about this, Bob. And I have to admit, I've evolved myself. Hate that term, but I've evolved myself to realizing that, you know, sometimes it's not, you know, I didn't like a lot of the things that Hillary said or a lot of centrist Democrats said, but then something occurred to me is at least those are people that I could talk to. Those are people that I could say, hey, let's sit down and talk about this. Whereas when it was all or nothing, you know, we ended up having, as we have now, a group of people who don't want to hear it.
Yeah, when it's all or nothing, you get all or nothing. And mostly you get nothing.
And mostly you get nothing. And, you know, and let me just say one other thing, too, is I have to say, and this probably has me going back to my Ohio roots and a certain amount of empathy with my hillbilly brothers and sisters, is I get so sick of hearing, well, they're voting against their own best interest.
Oh, God damn, if that doesn't, that just, I mean, that makes me eat shit and run rabbits.
Oh, I hate hearing that. And I feel like saying, you know what? Let's get off our condescending. We're better than those poor little whoevers. And this is where I tend to think that this whole, you know, we'll use the term economic anxiety. That's where I think there's some merit to it. Is you need to understand is if this those the people who it's not a matter of they're voting against their self-interest. It's their self-interest to them is different than what you think self-interest
precisely.
Is. And until you understand that to them their self-interest is, I don't want the queers to get married and I don't want the blacks to have jobs, until you can understand that they don't look at it that way.
There really are people in this country, and I'm using Appalachia as my palate here. There really are people in my state who before they fall asleep at night, pray to their God for the lives of the precious little fetuses. Okay?
Right.
And they worry about them, that somewhere there's a woman who's going to kill her baby. And
that is so ridiculous, Bob. That's like saying a blowjob is cannibalism. I mean...
Well, I mean...
But hold on,
Steve.
And Bob, you know, I come from a small town in Ohio, and I'm right there with you. And here's what the issue seems to me to be. Rather than saying they're voting against their own self-interest, it would seem to me, here's how you come at folks like that. You say, okay, you don't want people to have abortions. Okay, fine. That's your thing. And then I think what you need, what the thing to do is to point out to those people, okay, how do we get, can we all agree that rather than saying we don't want people to have abortions, we can say, this is where Democrats suck, are so awful. Rather than looking at it that way, say, what can we do to make it so a woman feels like she doesn't have to do that? Or what can we do to make it so a woman doesn't have to have an abortion? Okay, how about we give, you know, go back to Jocelyn Elders. We make sure that every guy has a condom on his lunch tray and every woman has a diaphragm in her lunchbox. That's one way of doing it.
Is that what we're calling it now, her lunchbox? I'm sorry.
What I'm saying is,
well, yeah, I kind of wish. I'm gonna say this. I mean no disrespect. Kind of wish we had a couple of women in the room right now, because yeah, this sounds like a bunch of white guys sitting around rapping.
Bingo.
I try to get Karen to come in here.
But let me
understand what I'm saying.
I do. Yes. But let me and you know what? I'll get emails over the weekend, and I'll try to share them on Monday if I. But Steve, I want to go back. You said that's like saying masturbation is, what was it?
A blowjob is cannibalism.
A blowjob is cannibalism. Okay.
That was a gut reaction. I knew it was going to haunt me. So
No. I actually think it's great. So.
Yeah. But only if you chew and swallow.
Bob, give yourself a cowbell, brother. Yeah, like
first cowbell of the night, right into the gutter. I want to push back a little bit, Steve, from Georgia, Stan, because it's ridiculous to you and it's ridiculous to me. There are people out there who are really, really, really motivated by their faith, and they are really, really motivated by what gets said to them every Sunday in the pulpit. And odds are these are also the people who show up on Wednesdays and Sunday nights too. Or the Roman Catholics who are there for mass every time the priest can get the door open.
We were a part of that bunch in our youth, Bob. We know.
And so I want to provide a little counterpoint here, and I don't want to sound like an elitist snob in the process, but I probably will.
You're among friends, so don't worry about it.
It's okay.
If if your granddaddy died young of a heart attack, and your daddy died young of a heart attack, let's back it up. If your great-granddaddy's died young of a heart attack, and your granddaddy's died young of a heart attack, and your daddy died young of a heart attack, guess what? You get to die young of a heart attack. It's the way it is. All right? And so trying to convince somebody that it can be something other than what it is a it's a tough sell. Okay? And you know, when I hear some well-meaning progressive say, yeah, and I go back to the original topic, you know, they're voting against their own interests. They are. I don't understand why those people vote against their own interests. Those people just don't understand. Those people. On the one hand, I agree with them. But on the other hand, I want to look at them and say, well, aren't you just precious for knowing what their own interests are when you've never met them in your entire goddamn life?
Oh, my God. Thank you for saying that, because I've thought this. It's so fucking condescending.
You know,
it's a huge generalization.
You march into West Virginia and start saying some of the things about guns that I say. You're going to offend everybody. Okay? Now, I imagine that my position on guns would be very well taken on KPFK or KPFA. It don't play so good around here. But I also, if people, you know, if the people I offended were listening carefully, I also say that there's a big damn difference between how one approaches firearms here and how one approaches them in downtown L.A. Okay? Because I've never seen a deer drive go down Wilshire Boulevard. But I have seen a bunch of hunters in West Virginia go 50 across, pushing through the woods, forcing the deer ahead of them. Seen that. Bob, it's a strategy.
Devin told me the same thing. He said, Larry, we here in the country, we have a whole different attitude toward our guns than people in the urban areas.
And I don't know a lot of hillbillies who go into the woods every November looking for that Boone and Crockett atypical rack with a goddamn 9mm pistol either. Okay? I mean, people take their shooting sports very seriously here. I don't know good hunters who go into the woods with an AR-15 or an AK-47 either. I mean, they spend real good money on things like Browning 270s with glass-bedded forearms and stainless barrels and loopholed 4.5x14 scopes, and they hand load their own ammunition with ballistic tipped bullets, and you know they talk about the relative merits of different gunpowders the way that somebody in Manhattan talks about the relative merits of different kinds of caviar, and it can get just as heated. So I'm not, you know, until somebody can prove to me that they, by God, know what their own interests are that those people are voting against, I'm kind of sick of hearing it.
Bob, can I just tell you, I almost got into a fight with someone the other day. Out, you know, very good, well-meaning person, talking about, and because I was mentioning about, you know, we were talking specifically about folks in Appalachia and West Virginia, and I had somebody say, well, you know, they just stayed there and they didn't move away and get an education. And I said to the guy, I said, I wanted to say more. I said, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You've lived in California in New York all your life. You've never grown up in an area where what you saw is all you knew and that's all you thought it could be. And you know what? For this, and I'm saying that because I was from a small town in Ohio. I have relatives who grew up, who were born, grew up, and who grew up and live in the same place, and you know, beyond the city limits, it's just the world out there. And when I hear this shit, I get so sick of the how condescending, and it probably because I was kind of a dick like that for a while.
I still am.
And I just get sick of it, and I have to slap myself down and say, wait a minute. You know, it ain't as easy as, well, our whole family will get in a car, and we'll just go where the jobs are. We'll just go where we can get an education. And I get so sick of people who come from a point of privilege saying, well, why can't they just do what I did, without ever thinking that maybe there's a reason they didn't. Or maybe there's a reason they couldn't.
Well, I'm sitting here.
I'm adding of somebody of the female persuasion here.
Oh, yay. Good. But, you know, I'm sitting here on this acre in West Virginia. I've said it before.
Jules.
80-year-old house. I'm not going anywhere. You know, this is one of those stand or fall kind of things. Because I can't go anywhere else. And I frankly don't know how. I love going to the city. I don't know how happy I'd be living in the city all the time. Because I'll be real crass here. There's a certain pleasure in taking a piss in the backyard in the middle of the night.
Well, Bob, I've pissed off the subway platform many times, so I can relate.
Steve from Georgia, Stan, if I don't get an amen out of you, we're not speaking anymore.
If I had a cowbell, I'd ring it, Bob.
Okay, just a good outdoor.
I go to the north door of the man cave and piss all the time when I'm doing this.
Right, see?
I've done worse in Central Park, so let me tell you.
Hey, save your septic tank, right, Bob? I mean, give it a break, man.
You ever paid to pump one of them sumbitches out?
About $300, yeah.
God damn right.
They're expensive. They really are.
It's like $270 here.
I got to do it
next year.
Hey, Jules, how are you? I have a question. Are you in Indiana?
Yes, I am.
Where?
Fort Wayne, far northeast corner.
Okay, I have. You ever heard of a town called Centerville, Indiana?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I have relatives there.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, I'm about, I'm about 25 miles from the Ohio border and maybe an hour from the Michigan border.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, my grandparents are buried about maybe 20 miles from the Indiana border. But I had an uncle, my grandpa's brother, I guess that's a great uncle or one of those removed, I never get that whole this removed or that removed thing. What the hell was the name of the town? He was not too far from Richmond, Indiana. It's funny, I've actually talked to people from Indiana.
Yeah, Southern.
Yeah, who never heard of Richmond.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, that's where they're from. So I have Indiana ties myself. Anyway,
yeah,
I'm just
Defiance is just over the line, not too
gotcha,
far. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, when I was a kid, I played hockey in Ohio. We went to a couple of Fort Wayne Comets games when I was a kid. So.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Yeah. Comets are a good time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll shut up and put my soapbox back under the bed and stop talking quote unquote women's issues.
Steve, before you shut up, I just wanted to say thanks for articulating the Nancy Pelosi thing much better than I could have.
Well, thank you. I actually put on the Facebook page because I just, like I say, I've always been a numbers guy even since I was 10 years old. So,
but I just wanted to say thanks before we parted ways. Thanks.
Well, you're very welcome.
And
I found the Pelosi talk
too.
Very interesting also. The Pelosi-Schumer situation is a very interesting one because it puts two very centrist, what I consider more centrist, Democrats into a position where perhaps we need to have someone a little bit less on the moderate side, so to speak, and a little bit more on the progressive side.
Less toxic?
yeah, to lead and help to encourage younger voters, because they're there, and that's great, and it does bring in older money, but it doesn't encourage the younger people to get involved. It really doesn't, I don't think. It's a dying breed. It really is. It's what the Republicans keep focusing on, and that's where they're going to lose out in the end.
Until the younger generation, Jules, grows up and starts making money and having families and 401ks and car payments and mortgage payments and all of that stuff.
They're never going to make it that far, Bob.
There's an evolutionary process, and there will, Jesus said, "The poor you have always with you," and it comes across as kind of shitty on Jesus's part. But the fact of the matter is, if he wanted to talk about a plague upon culture and society, the rich you have always with you, okay? Somebody, and it's a tiny number. I mean, we know, the 0.1% in this country controls how much wealth? More wealth than what? Than 50% of the country?
And it keeps shrinking. It can only get so small before it becomes minuscule.
And then we call them king.
And the king gets overthrown.
And usually when you do that, a whole lot of poor people get slaughtered. I highly recommend looking into the uprising of the Jacquerie of the 14th century in France.
Yes, I realize that, but it's very cyclical too. Is it not?
And then somebody in the poor rises up and becomes rich.
Exactly.
So,
hey.
And that's where one generation or several generations are going to have to come together, and they're going to have to be much smarter. They're going to have to be a hell of a lot more smarter.
Well, they're going to have to get real damn. They're going to have to get real damn hungry before they get smart, because there seems to be a direct proportional correlation between the two. The generation of my parents started out in starvation. And they kept that Depression-era mindset with them until they went into the ground. And along the way, they worked their asses off. They amassed a tiny little bit of personal wealth. They were able to do for themselves, enjoy themselves. Once in a while, they worked like draft animals. But all in all, they weren't jealous of Rockefellers and whatever. But they lived in a society that put a certain amount of value on them and their middle class ways.
But yes, you have to realize each successive generation has had so many advancements that it has been able to have more relaxation time, more pleasure time, and they expect more and more out of that time. They expect to have more and more of that time and less actual work. And it continues to progress. As it continues to progress, then we run into more and more of a situation. So something's going to have to come to a standstill. Something's going to have to come to a stop. It's going to come down to a series of ethical decisions on the human conscience.
Hey, can I start a totally frivolous conversation?
Well,
no.
stand by just a minute, Rick, because we just got somebody in on the stress line, and there's not that much time left in the program. And by the way, with 11 minutes to go in the program, $170 to finish the week. Can we do that? Could we? Is it possible? Maybe. Because given this time of the month, I don't think we're going to see a whole lot from the overnight crew, because subscriptions are real thin right about now. So we got $170 to go. Let's run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Good evening.
It's a voice from the distant past.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just was moved to call in by the absence of the fairer sex when it was turning into a locker room here. So I was really glad to hear Jules show up.
Well, good.
Bob, this is Roger Rusko.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Am I the only one having a hard time hearing?
No, I'm potting him up some.
Oh, okay.
We have some audio. Seems like some audio issues. I'm just showing up on the radar screen.
Okay, good to hear from you, Roger.
I've been out there all along.
Hey, how you doing, Roger?
Who's that?
Rick.
That's Billable Rick.
Hey, Rick.
You hanging in there okay?
I heard Rick and Larry and Steve and Jules and...
Hi, babe.
Howdy. I'll just lay back. I'm just indicating continued existence.
Okay, sounds good, Roger. You're right there. Hang out, what have you. Glad you called.
Yeah, don't be a stranger, Roger.
And by the way, thank you to Sharon. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you very kindly. We are now down to 150 to go. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you so very, very much. Okay, Rick, now you can be frivolous.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. So, well,
yeah, I called to be the representative woman.
I know, Jules. I'll try to be quick here.
Okay, wait, Rick. Go ahead, Roger.
Oh, Jules?
One more quick shout-out to Turkey.
Hello. Why aren't you using Skype?
This is the deal. I get to go see America.
Now, hold on, Rick, hold on.
Okay.
Go ahead, Roger.
Well, that's all I wanted to say was a shout out to Starkey, that's all.
Okay. Well, Skype's there for you, too, anytime you want. All right, Rick, go, man.
Okay, yeah, I get to see you. America, the band, play at the Rose with the beautiful Lori tonight at, I guess they play at 9 o'clock. There's a warm-up act. I'm not sure who that is. But the big event is tomorrow. I get to see the Arroyo Seco. I go to the Arroyo Seco Festival. It's basically an all-day rock festival and music festival. And I think I'm definitely going to see Tom Petty for the nightcap. And then I'm trying to figure out, I hear that someone named Jay Jackson is very talented. She's playing during the day. And I'm definitely going to check out John Mayall and the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. And I guess Jeff Goldblum and his orchestra is actually pretty good. He plays jazz piano and tells funny stories. And then
The Fly, Jeff Goldblum?
Yeah, the actor. And then I'll probably see Charles Bradley and his extraordinaires, and then maybe the Alabama Shakes, if they're pretty good.
They're very good.
All sorts of shows. It's like they've got like 13 or 14 bands. I can only probably see maybe 5 of them, you know? So I have to kind of pick and choose. So that'll be my weekend. And I'm thinking of going to see Roger Waters on June 27th at the Staples Center, just because my son has never seen him. And I know he'll have a 50-foot pig with projections of Donald Trump's ugly face and so forth. So,
Can't miss that.
No, I can't miss that. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, that's my weekend.
Hey, can I ask a question? Yes, it does sound exciting. And two questions. Has anyone ever heard of a band called the Ebony Hillbillies?
I haven't.
The Ebony Hill, and I may have sent you something about this, Bob. The Ebony Hillbillies all I can say is like a band of, you know, banjo, and one guy plays a banjo, one guy plays a bass, one guy plays a washboard, and they're all a bunch of black dudes and I've seen them all throughout in the New York City, in the subways, you'll have like various artists and whatnot, classical artists and all kinds of artists playing, and I've seen them, and they have CDs, and I'll tell you, I think it's like bluegrass. I guess that's what you'd call it. I would ask you, if you're into that kind of music, check them out. I love listening to them. I think they're great.
I had never heard of them. I will check them out.
Yeah. The other thing too is anybody here a Twin Peaks fan?
Yes.
Okay. Have you watched the new one?
No, I quit watching TV a while ago.
Okay.
About 6 years ago. So.
Okay. Yeah, it's on. I think it's Netflix or who? One of those. And I just wanted. I wanted to. You know, I thought when it first came out in '90, it was really off the wall weird. But now, you know, take away the censorship of network TV, and it's off the charts weird, and I can't get enough of it, but I can't figure out why because I have no clue what's going on, and I'm just.
Well, I mean, it's still David Lynch, and you're gonna
David Lynch,
you know, and you're just gonna sit there waiting for another wave of weirdness to wash over you.
You know, it's funny you say that because I keep watching it, thinking, okay, next week it'll all come together. And next week comes, and I watch it, and I'm thinking, what the hell did I just watch? What did I just spend an hour? Because David Lynch, it's like there's weird, and there's Mulholland Drive,
How do you say weird, and then you go Mulholland Drive instead of going Blue Velvet? I mean, this is a fight worth having.
I got to tell you, Bob, as soon as I said that, I'm like, wait a minute. Then there was the cut-off ear that the movie starts with the cut-off ear with the ants crawling through it, and Dennis Hopper sucking on nitrous oxide. Yeah. So, yeah, I will defer to you. I will be a sycophant to you regarding that. But, yeah, you're right. It's – I can't figure out – you know, and I can't believe that there are people out there who would say to me, you mean you don't understand, and who totally get it. Of course, they're all probably, you know, named what, Celery and Treebeard and all that. But I was just wondering if anybody had watched it, because I just don't get it, but I can't stop watching.
I haven't, and I'm still not okay after Ron and Raleigh told me that we're done with American Gods for the season. I'm really kind of bummed. I was looking forward to that, you know. But then again, The Expanse is over too, and I can't find anywhere that'll see. Netflix was supposed to be premiering Altered Carbon sometime this year, and I can't find a damn word about that.
What is that? Altered Carbon?
It's the sci-fi cyberpunk novel of the first decade of the 21st century.
Okay.
And it's brilliant, and I'm quite sure that they're screwing it up real big time. But it's like it was all, ooh, Altered Carbon, all kinds of press, and then nothing.
Yeah. Speaking of screwing it up, I haven't seen Handmaid's Tale, but I've actually heard it was pretty good. What? Anyone have any?
It's awesome. Awesome.
Is it good? I heard it was actually pretty good.
If you read the book, it doesn't follow the book verbatim.
Better Call Saul.
In fact, they go on and beyond the book. And I'm sorry, I'm stepping on somebody, but yes, it's awesome.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard it was actually really, really good. Is that that's Netflix too, or is it Hulu?
Hulu.
Is it Hulu? Okay, I think I have a free. Okay, I want to check it out.
This series is over, just like Better Call Saul, till next year. So
okay, I may just do a binge watching.
And I don't know when I'm finally going to get to the Battle of Culloden with that Outlander series.
You know, Bob, I have to tell you something. You've got some of the weirdest tastes, and I think that's one of the reasons I love you so much, is because you're like this super eclectic, ethereal, very intellectual person who has these, who loves barbecue. So it's just like, and loves really good food. So that's, you know, that's another thing. Why
yeah,
I
don't
love
leave off
so
good
much.
Beer and good liquor just because I can't.
Okay, okay.
He's
okay.
A well-rounded guy, Steve.
Yeah, yes.
Not nearly as rounded as I used to be.
Yeah.
we got to get out of here.
Sadly, that we do.
Oh, bummer. That's a bummer, man.
But
I hope everyone knows.
Well,
what that comes
dude,
from,
that's
so.
Just your opinion, man.
That's like a total buzzkill.
Okay, one message before we get out of here. In response to Billable Rick, a note coming in for you from culture correspondent Michael in Madison. Tell Billable Rick, no, probably Charles Bradley is a must see. He just beat stomach cancer, by the way. I've seen him twice before that, and he blows the roof off and makes soul fans out of death metal fans. I've witnessed it. Okay, that's pretty stirring.
Appreciate that.
And by the way, if you get a chance and he gets anywhere near you, walk, crawl, do whatever have to, drag yourself by the tongue to get to see Jason Isbell as he tours on his new album, The Nashville Sound, Billable Rick, and anybody cool. else for that matter. You want to see that.
Cool.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. We are out of here.
Have a great weekend, all.
And thanks, everybody, for jumping in this evening. Thanks to everybody who keeps the program going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to Steve from Georgistan, our midweek utility chat room moderator. And thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.